Welcome to the July 17th, 2023 Finance and Administration Committee meeting, and it will now begin. First off, let's do the Pledge of Allegiance. And Director Colley, welcome back, and please do the honors.
All right, please join with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God.
Okay, before we start the meeting, I have some announcements to make about procedures that we'll have for tonight's meeting. The meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may alternatively participate remotely by using the toll-free call-in number or Zoom webinar link provided in the committee packet, which is posted on the SCB Water website. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting a meeting to members of the public, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. For members of the public who are present and would like to comment, please complete and submit a public comment card to the administrator to help expedite. And the administrator is Erica sitting on the left over there. If you don't know her. To participate in public comment from a computer, tablet, or smartphone, please click the raised hand feature in Zoom or dial *9. When I announce the agenda item on which you wish to speak, when it's your turn to speak, please dial *6 to unmute. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments, first from members attending in person, and then those attending remotely. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. These would be taken in order of hands are raised. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration. And if, of course, we have consideration to put it on the consent calendar, if possible. Any PowerPoint presentations shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCB Water website. So we have all present on the committee members, and then we can continue with item number 2, public comments. Do we have any general public comments tonight?
No general public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Item 3. Discuss and recommend actions for ground lease property at 22722 Soledad Canyon Road to be presented by Rochelle Patterson.
Rochelle. Actually, Christina Jacobs, our right-of-way. Jacob, our right-of-way agent, will be presenting.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairman Peterson and committee members. My name is Christina Jacob, a right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. This evening, we bring an item to discuss the property owned by SCV Water at 22722 Soledad Canyon Road. Next slide, please. This property is located near the Bokeh Junction within the city of Santa Clarita on Soledad Canyon Road, east of Bokeh Canyon Road. A location map is also in your packets as attachment 1. Please note the locator box on the presentation in your packets is a different location. So please reference this correct location on this slide for the little red box. Thank you. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this street view photo shows the building in its current condition from the street level. This building was built for the use of our predecessor in interest, Santa Clarita Water Company. A bit of a timeline. In 2011, Action Family Counseling began leasing the property from our predecessor in interest, Castaic Lake Water Agency, CLWA. In 2017, we entered into the current lease with CLWA, which is attachment 2 in your packets. And in 2022, the option to extend was exercised with SCV Water. The current lease expires September 30th, 2023, which is why we're here this evening. Next slide, please. This property is currently leased to Action Family Counseling, which is an organization that provides services to the local community, including drug and alcohol treatment and nonprofit support services in group settings to parents and teenagers. This slide shows some photos of how the building interior currently looks. The photo on the left shows the lobby upon entering. The middle photo shows the staff area, which is very similar to how it looked when it was used previously for its previous purpose. And the photo on the right shows artwork on a wall in the services area where Action Family Counseling partnered with a nonprofit to create art. Next slide, please. So we worked with our agency counsel, Best and Krieger, BB&K, to identify our options to address the lease expiration. So the first option on the top is to enter into a month-to-month tenancy upon this expiration. So the current lease is a no holdover clause. The longer holdover period goes without clarification, so the more the situation can be interpreted to mean a month-to-month tenancy based on the current lease terms. So if a longer holdover period is required, a formal month-to-month tenancy should be considered, as it would allow the agency to control the terms of the month-to-month, such as whether the rent should remain or increase. So while this is the shortest term option, there is no long-term security with this option. The second option in the middle is to enter into a new lease on the same or new lease terms. Entering into a new lease has many benefits, including the ability to clarify terms, to negotiate a rent escalator similar to in the current lease, and identify new terms or language needed to ensure consistency with current agency standards and policies. So we've been working with BB&K to create consistency in agreements, and this option would be an ideal opportunity to do just that. This option also allows for an income stream through a negotiated term and allows for Action Family Counseling to continue to serve the community in its current capacity and location during the term that we negotiate. So for these reasons, this is the preferred option. The last option is to dispose of the property through the Surplus Lands Act process. This would be governed by the SLA process. Action and local developers have expressed only a general interest in acquiring the property. To date, there have been no formal offers or detailed proposals that have been presented to SCV Water. The SLA process is a lengthy process, and we would receive a one-time payment for the property after the process, and there would be deed restrictions on the property. Next slide, please. So if SCV Water used an appraiser to provide a value of the property, the finding of the highest and best use in its current use of $2.42 million. The current lease rate of $13,545 per month is also found to be within the market rate and is on the higher end of the lease rate at $2.45 per square foot. So this table identifies the cost and the current rate. Next slide, please. So these are the steps and the timeline for each step in the surplus lands process. Joe Byrne presented this process to the board last August. He gave a very detailed description of the process. So I have this slide as a reminder of the lengthy process. I'm not going to go into all of the details that Joe did, but this is just to be able to give you a reminder. Next slide, please. So this slide shows some of the pros and cons for each of the options. So in a month-to-month, this is the shortest term. That's a pro. But the con is that it provides no long-term security of a monthly income for the agency. The new agreement, as mentioned, there are many benefits. And because of that, this is the staff recommended preference. So we'd be able to have the monthly income stream at the current rent or with an escalator. The current rent is $13,545 and we'd be able to negotiate an escalator. This provides that monthly income. We would also be able to enter into a month-to-month tenancy while negotiations go on, just to have that time, because it could potentially be a lengthier process. This would also allow to clarify the terms. As mentioned previously, we've been working hard to be able to make the agreements consistent, so we'd be able to have this opportunity to do so. And then it would be a continued community benefit. Action Family Counseling has been in this location since 2011, and people know where to go for the help that they need. And then the Surplus Land Act process, we would only receive a one-time payment. There wouldn't be a guaranteed monthly income. It would be a lengthy process. And Action Family Counseling may not be able to serve the community from their well-established location as they have been in the past. Our next slide, please. So the recommendation this evening is that the Finance and Administration Committee discuss and recommend actions for the ground lease property at 22722 Soledad Canyon Road. We also have Mr. Guillermo Frias of, or we don't have him. Okay. we may have him. but we do have Mr. Kerry Quashin, who is the founder and CEO of Action Family Counseling, here with us in person this evening. And I now give this item back to you, Chairman Peterson.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. Do we have any public comment on this item?
Yes, we do. We have two public comments at this time. The first is Kerry Quashin from Action. Please. You may go ahead and approach the podium, and you have 3 minutes for your public comment.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it. And I've been treating people now in chemical dependency for, gosh, over 40 years, and nothing. We've never seen any kind of a crisis like we've been seeing in this last 10 years. And the saddest thing is I did a press conference about 7 months ago that I didn't. I had Sheriff B and the Waver and Garcia and all those people coming over. And what I found out that day, which I did not know, is more people die in Santa Clarita from accidental overdoses than any other place in Los Angeles. That's a fact. We have more accidental overdoses here in Santa Clarita than any other community. And I want to, first of all, thank the Water and Power for the opportunity to partner with you guys for the past dozen years. And I think that the amount of lives that we're able to save is incredible. I wish we could do more. Sadly, every time I pick up my Facebook or I see somebody else that had passed away from these drugs. Soon as the pandemic was over, the real pandemic showed up. And the real pandemic is over 100,000 people die in this country from accidental overdoses. That's confirmed. Take the unconfirmed and you could at least double that number. Take the suicides because of alcohol or drugs, you could quadruple that number. Then add domestic violence and child abuse and molestations and robberies and everything. I could tell you what the real pandemic is right now. And we, meaning Santa Clarita, I think do more in this community than any other community, meaning the sheriff's department and the hospital. And the Water and Power in Action in the hospital. I mean, lives are being saved, and it would be sad if that building wasn't there for us. That's all. People know where to go for help. And that's all I wanted to say. And I wanted to thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, we do have one more public comment. This is from Jules Nolan. You go ahead and approach the podium. You have 3 minutes for your public comment.
Hi, good evening. My name is Julianne Nolau. I've been living in Santa Clarita since 1991. I've been struggling with addiction for many, many years. And that's when I heard of Action Counseling Family Rehab. So I have about 3 months clean today. And it saved my life. I've been to other rehabs and nothing compared to Action Family Counseling Treatment Center. The location is ideal. It's in the center of Santa Clarita Valley. Myself and my peers depend on it. It's a safe place to go to. And, you know, I'm going to continue going to treatment 5 days a week. And knowing that, you know, I can go there to get help whenever I need to in the morning and at night gives me a sense of hope and security, and just knowing that, you know, I can do this one day at a time. And with the help of not only Carrie, but all the staff at Action and all my peers there too, it's a great support, and I depend on it. And now, not only me, but others too. And I've seen incredible stories come from that, and just amazing people recover and have a year or more of sobriety from this treatment center. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments or public comment from?
I do not have any further public comments at this time.
Okay, thank you.
And I do want to say Guillermo is now on the line.
All right, good. Questions or comments from the board? Kathy, I'm going to ask you first. Director Amichaj.
Okay, did you want to go first, though?
I have just a quick question. Oh. Maybe I think a question first, sure. And then I'll get a whole lot of comments, so I'll leave those aside. You noted on one of the slides
that if we entered into a lease that we wouldn't be able to sell, but that's not completely accurate, right? As properties are sold with a lease in place, and it's of course subject to the lease. We can do that. Is that not correct? If we chose to?
Well, I'm glad Guillermo Frias, our legal counsel from BB&K, is on the line, because he would be able to, he'll be able to speak to that very well.
Yes, Guillermo. And he is raising his hand and he's ready to speak. So let me just get him situated here.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you. I hope he can hear us back. Let me see. He might just be switching over. Here we go. Guillermo, want to try speaking again?
Yes. How is that? Can I be heard? Hello, everyone. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. Thank you. That comment is correct. You can always sell a property that is under a lease. The sale would be subject to the lease. So the owner would eventually take the property subject to the existing terms of the lease. I think the reason why it was written that way is because generally public agencies, when leasing to other public agencies, don't generally sell a lease midstream, because you do have to comply with the sale of the Disposition of Property Act, and that has its own unique requirements. So as a practical matter, although the statement is correct, it's generally not seen.
Thank you. So thank you, Ms. Jacob, for your presentation. Thank you, Mr. Quashin, for your comments. And thank you, Ms. Nolau, for your comments as well and sharing your story. So the factors that stuck with me are that it was noted in the report that the appraiser found the, quote, highest and best use, end quote, to be the present use. The agency receives a steady income source through the lease payments. Action is an organization that provides essential services in our community and is an important partner to the Sheriff's Department, to the Probation Department, to the local medical community as well. We heard from Ms. Nolau that the current location matters. That's where people know, they know where to go for services, and it's central in our community. And so all of that to say that I also support the staff recommendation for option two. It gives us financial stability on a month-to-month basis. It gives Action a sense of stability as well and not having to worry about whether or not they're going to have a location on a month-to-month basis. And I think similar terms would be appropriate as long as the agency is not losing money on the interaction. I think that it would be nice to continue to provide a place for Action to be. And it would be nice that if and when the agency considers selling in the future, that perhaps Action could be the ones to buy it so they can continue in perpetuity. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick question also.
Vice President Gutzeit, please.
I think this is probably for legal counsel too. But before I say that, great presentation. Thank you. And I'm very familiar with the work of Action and have known Carrie for many years. So thank you for coming and thank you for speaking. The agency has obligations when we do public bidding to get competitive bids. Do we have any obligation to advertise and, for instance, lease to highest bidder, or is it the agency's choice who to lease to?
I'll defer that to Mr. Frias.
Sure. The requirement is a general requirement that the agency not waste taxpayers' money or gift taxpayers' money, which would be the case if the agency doesn't take steps to value the property, value the rental market, and open the process or the possibility to consider other options. And so in this case, you've gotten an independent appraisal that says that you're getting market rates and that the lease is comparable to what's available in the open market. So as far as the requirements are concerned with regards to the gifting of public funds, you're certainly not doing that because you're getting what the market bears. And that's all that's required. There is an internal property disposition and property acquisition requirements within your own guidelines, but they don't address this specific instance of whether or not you're required to generally market the property to the open public or the open market. I think with the appraisal, you have enough justification to proceed with the recommendation, should you be interested in doing so.
Okay, thank you for that answer.
Director Colley, go ahead.
So we wouldn't own this property if I'd had my way a few years ago. RJ Kelly was the one who was hard over on keeping it as an investment. Ultimately, I would like us to not own the building. I think it isn't our primary business, and we ought to be out of the commercial lease business. That doesn't need to happen today. I spent 20 years at Valencia High School, much of that as an administrator. And I can tell you as a school administrator, we cannot understate the importance of this organization to our valley. To say that it has saved lives is just almost trivializes it because it is done. You know, I have personally known many of the children that it has served and served well. And even in some of my hardships in my life, I have called on Carrie to assist me and advise me and help me. And he's been there to do that as he is with anybody in this valley. I think that if you could line up dozens of administrators, school administrators in this valley that would echo my comments that it serves the young folks in our valley, school age kids, extremely well. So that's a hugely important. I don't know that we could possibly overstate that. The building itself, I don't know why they think it's a great location, that they're getting in and out of the parking lot. There is taking your life into your hands every single time. It's the driveway leads out onto an outside curve with a speed limit of 50 miles an hour, and the average traffic is probably doing 70. I think the location of the building, it was not very good when we used it for our retail headquarters, and I don't think it's improved. But if the current lessees think it's a good location, that's good for me. So, you know, my preference on this would be to ensure that Action has continued access to the building. I would not want them to be feeling like, you know, they need to overpay. It certainly sounds like they're already overpaying, frankly, because if you look at the amount that we should be getting for an average square foot, that property we're already getting on the high end of the market, and it's not a high end building. So I would hope that staff does not take advantage of the fact that they are the current resident and current lessee, and for business necessities, they would want to continue that. I would hope that we would in the negotiations be very fair, because they are very valuable and fair to this community. My preference would be to do a long-term lease, give them a 10-year lease, and then set out to start the process of disposing of the property. And presumably, at some point, they would be in a position that they would be able to figure out the financing and buy the building from us and own it outright. That would be my preference, is again to get out of the business, and but certainly to make sure in that every opportunity for them to remain in service to this community would remain.
Thank you, Director Colley. Vice President Gusite, go ahead.
Do we have, or is there a clause in there for first right of refusal for the current tenants to buy it if they, for instance, got a grant for the purchase price and they wanted to? Is that something that's in the lease?
That's not in the current lease, mm-hmm. But that's something that would be able to be negotiated into a new agreement.
Yeah, I support the staff negotiating, you know, what's mutually agreeable for a long-term lease. I did ask this afternoon for comparison of, you know, earnings. If we outright sold it, what would we earn on the money versus what do we earn renting it? I didn't see it in there, but I understand we own the building free and clear. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, we're net, it's positive to the agency to lease it and receive rent versus selling it and investing that money. I know property has, you know, sometimes has management issues, but my understanding is they're also paying most of the expenses. So, you know, as long as it's a positive for the agency, I support continuing with a renegotiated lease.
Thank you all. I support option number two also, and support this community group that has done a great service for our community here, as I've witnessed my 20 years here. And with that, I have one question. This, the funds that we receive from the lease, for the lease, go into non-operating funds. Is that correct, Ms. Patterson? And those funds are presently being kind of earmarked for one of our other programs that we're doing this past year, enacted is the, I can't remember the name of it now.
Repair assistance program. Yeah,
yes, yes. So we've tried to put the money back into the community as it was, that as it come from. So that's kind of a sidelight of what we do with the funding, because it isn't, it is being used wisely in the community back. So with that, I guess we will have a presentation at the board again. Is that the?
I think that was a question. Would the direction be to allow staff to start the negotiation process and new contract? Yes. And then once that's ready, then to bring it back to the committee and full board?
Oh yes, we can do it that way. Sure. Let's do the lease agreement. Okay. Yeah, get that accomplished. All right. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you all.
Yes. Yes. Item number 4. Recommend approval of resolution authorizing the 2020 fiscal year 2023-24 water supply contract payments. I know Rochelle would like to do this.
I know. This item is recurring annually every year at this time. We just asked to authorize the payments for our water supply contract payments with the state water contract. These funds are taken out of our restricted fund that we collect on our property tax from the state water project. It is authorizing the payments for fiscal year 23-24, but also for July of 2024, since we pay it in June. So it crosses fiscal years. So the resolution is to approve the fiscal year 22-23 with the July 2024 payment paid in June. And that concludes my report.
Erica, do we have any public comment?
We do not have any public comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. Discussion by the committee.
Consent.
Yeah, we can put it on. Do you have any? Yeah. Oh, Vice President Gusite, go ahead.
It says, did our payments are fully funded by agency set property tax revenues? Is it a one-to-one match, like the property tax will match exactly? It's property tax slightly.
No.
Well, certainly at this point, if it's fully funded, it's going to be slightly higher, if not exactly.
Yes. So we did just last month or the prior month, the budget for the state water contract, and we set the property tax rate.
Uh-huh.
It's similar right now. Eventually it starts kind of going the opposite way.
Yeah.
When other programs start ramping up, like the tunnel, the project. But right now it's pretty close. Revenues and expenses are pretty close.
So we try to stay basically ahead of it with the property tax setting.
We do, but we tried this year to do a 10-year forecast and to make sure we have at least 1 year of property tax set aside, just in case something happens that we can at least make, we have time to recover the next year of property tax. So we do have that in our forecast.
Thank you.
Any more comments or questions? Then it sounds like it's unanimous. So I'll put this on the consent calendar.
Once you can figure out a way to not pay your bill.
Oh, they do. Okay, item number 5. We have two presenters tonight. We have recommend approval of contract with Premier Property Preservation for janitorial services. Rochelle, you can start off.
So I'm going to start, but we also have Roland, our facility supervisor, on the line in case I can't answer any specific questions. But our current janitorial services contract is expiring. So we went out for RP, and we 45 vendors were notified through Planet Bids. There were 30 downloads of the RFP. We required a mandatory walkthrough to make sure that they were aware of all of our facilities. We have the 6 locations that are listed in our committee report. 17 actually came from 16 companies, and we received 10 formal bids. We can see from the attachment of all of the bidders that we received with our ratings on there and how they ranked with cost and service. We checked the references for the top scoring proposals, and they were all positive. So we are recommending a contract with Premier Property Preservation. It's a 3-year contract for a total of $549,000. The first 2 years is $163,000 plus a 10% contingency in case we need carpet cleaning or windows, any extra costs. I do want to note that we are currently paying our contract is $221,000 a year. So it's actually about a $40,000 decrease in our current costs. So the recommendation is to enter into contract with Premier Property Preservation for $549,000 for a 3-year agreement. Concludes my report.
Thank you. Any public comments?
Do not show any public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll leave it, open it up for the committee. We'll start with Director Colley.
I'm just curious as to what happened. As I recall, last time we went out and tried to find somebody, we couldn't find anybody that wanted to do it at all.
No, I don't know. I mean, our responses to RFPs lately have been pretty low. I'm pretty much in every department. But we had a lot of people here on a Saturday, I believe it was, to go around to all of our facilities. So
I just
we should.
I guess, yeah. I'm just I just remember the discussion last time that we got to beg somebody to come and clean the house.
Well, and I think that's why the cost was higher too. There was not much competition, but. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's and the labor market today is difficult for employers. So I'm kind of surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised. Thanks.
Director Armitage.
Yeah, thank you. Same thing. My first comment was 10 bids, !! But I think you're right. I think we should ask Roland, like, hey, what'd you do? Like, we want to learn from you. So it's doing something right. I'm doing many things right, I'm sure, not just one thing. I want to say also thank you for this awesome summary of the bids and the way they were scored. This was really cool to see, and it gives me confidence because clearly the chosen vendor had high markings and everything. So I love this summary that you provided for us. Thank you. You know, and you mentioned we're paying less and they've got good references. So like, this is pretty good and obviously supportive. So thank you.
Just one question, just a procedural thing. I noticed it wasn't commented in the report in the packet, but insurances, how is that handled?
The insurance?
Yeah.
It's all laid out in the RFP, what our limits are, and we make sure we receive all of those before the contract.
Right. Yeah, I'm impressed too. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of related to the Roland working for somebody that this company worked for before. Is that how it was?
It did, but at least it's a personal experience with the service to just make sure, because they were the low bid by quite a bit, just to make sure that we will receive the service that's been promised in the RFP. So that's comforting.
You know, I might venture one really wild card theory on that. Why more bidders this time? If you think about what's happened to occupied office space and maybe the frequency of cleaning, maybe it's a bit more competitive market, but just a thought.
Yeah.
That could be that some of the vendors who didn't bid previously are backfilling for places that have gone to even more remote work or less frequent cleanings. So, but it's totally a theory.
What's the desire of the committee as far as consent?
That's good.
All right, we're good. All right, I'll put it on the consent.
Right.
All right, moving on to item six. Recommend approval of a revised purchasing policy. Patterson and Kim Grass.
Yes. So Kim Grass, our administrative services manager, is going to present this item.
Good evening. Thank you, Rochelle. And good evening to you. First, before I get started, I would like to acknowledge Katie, our new buyer, who was instrumental in gathering a lot of this data for us to compile the new policy. So thank you, Katie, and welcome. As you're aware, the purchasing policy is a vital document that outlines how the agency procures goods and services. Regular review and updates are essential to ensure its relevancy and accuracy. Since last update in December 2021, we have seen significant rise in costs across various categories as goods and services. And due to these increases, management had requested for us to look at our current policy and conduct an analysis of similar industry purchasing policies. Based on our findings, we are proposing the following changes to our purchasing policy that will assist our agency in managing the rise in costs and provide an efficient and clear policy. By increasing the general manager's authority from $100,000 to $150,000 for budgeted items, we increase efficiency by bringing fewer items to the board that have already been included in the adopted budget. This adjustment is consistent with other agencies' practices and will help us procure in a timely manner while maintaining the necessary checks and balances. We are proposing that the general manager should be authorized to approve construction change orders not to exceed 5% of the original construction contract amount. This change aims to simplify our processes, promote collaboration, and provide clear guidance to our project teams. By aligning the thresholds, we can enhance efficiency in managing these construction projects. And the 5% is below that of our surveyed agencies. To align with the increase in the general manager's approval level, we propose approval of the professional services contracts to increase from $100,000 to the $150,000 annually. For contracts exceeding that threshold, the board's approval will still be required. However, the general manager's authority to approve changes in professional services contracts up to 10% of the board authorized amount will not change and will remain at the 10% of the current policy. When any changes are done, they will be reported to the appropriate committee and the board as soon as possible. This change ensures that we obtain the best professional services while recognizing the increased cost and maintaining fiscal responsibility. We have carefully thought through these revisions, taking into account our agency needs and industry standards. These proposed changes will not supersede any statutory laws governing our contracts and operations. The updates to our purchasing policy are in line with our strategic plan objectives standardizing operating procedures and business practices, updating and maintaining clear and comprehensive policies, and enhancing our financial capabilities to manage cash. We ask that the Finance and Administration Committee recommends the Board of Directors approve the purchasing policy. And thank you. And I would like to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Erica, do we have any public comments?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Questions from the board committee? Vice President Gutzeit.
On the change orders with the GM authority of 5% or 10% for professional services, is that each change order or cumulative?
It would be each change order.
Okay.
It would be each change order.
Okay. I'll just say I have some
cumulative.
People are shaking.
Wait, it's cumulative? Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about
good.
That. Sorry about that.
Okay. Never mind. I have no other comment after hearing that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I saw that language. I missed the cumulative language. Okay. I got half the sentence, but yeah, good.
Yeah, it does say exceed 5% cumulative of the original construction contract amount.
Not well, yeah, but the wording of that, I saw that, and that says construction change orders not to exceed 5% cumulative of the original
construction.
So that means each change order would have to be less than 5%. All of them, that all change orders together,
yeah.
So regardless of the language, the intent is all of them together can't exceed 5%, or in the case of professional services, all of them together could not exceed 10%. Is the same cumulative language in there for that?
I have the policy right here.
Okay. Can we make sure that that's clear and then I'm fine with it?
Yes, the policy for the professional services does say cumulative as well. Says professional services contracts or purchase requisitions up to 10% cumulative of the amount authorized by the board.
Okay. It still seems a little unclear, but I don't know how to make it better on the fly. But if there's a way to clarify that it's all of them additive, because I know some companies like to just give you lots of them, but they're all small so they can go through and then they add up to a lot. I want to make sure that all together they don't go over.
We can look at that.
Excuse
okay.
me. Yeah. I just want to say I have Mike Albert on the line. He's raising his hand. He'd like to speak.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Sorry, that must have been an accident. I apologize.
Oh, come on.
Really?
Mike, join the party.
Ready
for real?
Okay. For real.
Thanks, Mike.
Just a web dictionary, Oxford, cumulative, increasing or increased in quantity, degree, or force by successive additions. So that, I think that was our intent, but and that's certainly how we take it. We couldn't go over that amount.
Yeah, or I guess you could say change orders until 5% of the original is met. That would make it crystal clear.
Well, I think we say not to exceed. In other words, I don't have the authority to approve a 6% cumulative change order, right? I would, once it's over 5, I have to come to the board for the rest.
Right, but if you did 6 1% change orders, is that allowed?
No.
Okay.
When I get to the fifth one, I'm done.
Okay. Okay. As long as we understand that.
Yeah. And I think you've seen that on a couple with our 4% limit that we're using now, which is kind of a legacy CLWA. I think our good friend Dean wanted a very tight grip on that. We do the same thing. You'll know we will negotiate up to the amount. And then beyond that, we have to bring it to the board. So we just think that's a little, it's even 5 is on the low end for most.
Yeah, especially 10%.
Yeah. We didn't want to shock you too much. Yeah. We'll build a track record first.
Yeah. Go ahead, Director Almatridge.
You've got a comment?
Yeah, but he had his hand up first.
Oh.
I don't mind reading.
Oh, you guys are just, I have to look.
Yeah,
that's fine. Director Colley, go ahead.
So this first question is, if the board was to approve a $1 million contract with a 10% contingency approved on the contract, would you have the authority under that contingency to use that for change orders? I'm assuming the answer would be yes, correct? If we've approved it.
Yeah, I think the construct, there is a provision in the policy that the board can set a different threshold for on an individual project basis. So let's say we had a construction project where we knew there was a higher level of uncertainty because of some factors, like you're going to have to dig a bunch of stuff up before you really know. Then at times that might be a situation where Courtney says, hey, I think it'd be better to have a 10% allowance before we had to come to the board. You could then authorize that for that one project at that time, yeah, when you're approving the contract.
Would we call that a contingency and
I think you
board
just,
language?
I think you would just say you would authorize the change order authority up to 10% for that particular contract. Still would have to be a negotiated change order. I could say no.
I mean, obviously you would be your authority. I get that. I'm just thinking of the action we just took. We said that we would have a 10% contingency in case we wanted to have carpets cleaned or windows washed. I'm assuming that.
Oh, I see. You're talking about that kind of
any contract. Kind of a contract where. So,
yeah, I can give a real world example to that. If you like, we actually do that. We've added that in our contract where we're not sure about pricing of materials, and we've given ourselves, let's say, a $20,000 contingency on the pricing materials. And above and beyond that, we have a 5% change order authority, or 4% on that project. We're asking for a 5%, and it would be a 5% on top of the contingency.
Okay.
That's how we've applied it before.
So okay, if the contingency is part of the awarded contract, that would be different than there's an awarded contract and we're coming back and wanting to add something.
But, yeah, the contingency is something that's still under our control. Correct. Obviously, that's not contracted money that's gone. And the contractor gets to spend it however they want. You spend it.
Right. And we use that pretty sparingly. Okay. But as you mentioned, they would use it for a janitorial service where you have these anticipated contingencies that you can foresee, whereas a change order are the unforeseen.
Okay. My only other comment is I think I would prefer to see the $150,000 limit be the ceiling on change orders without coming to the board as well. So even if we have a very large contract, that 5% of the contract exceeds $150,000, I would prefer to have the board see that as well. I think, and I don't see any reason not to, and it would be consistent, sort of with the logic of the policy as I read it anyway. So it just may be a matter of 5% cumulative with a maximum of $150,000.
So in that situation, any contract over $3 million, essentially it starts to ratchet down that percentage.
Correct.
Pretty dramatically.
Yep.
So a $6 million contract, it would be 2.5% change order threshold.
Yeah, I as a board member, I'd like to see that.
See it or approve it? Would being aware of it be adequate? Reporting of it?
For me, yes.
Okay, then. But I think we have a provision for reporting in there.
We do for the professional services, but we could add that same.
We have it in the
construction ones as well.
Are you familiar, Courtney? Can you speak to it?
Yeah.
I'll just have Courtney come up here and help me.
So yes, it is a village because we have vastly different activities in this area. Exactly. Yeah.
On any of the, not only the professional services, but any of our bid contracts with a contingency, we report out all of the change orders. Actually, we have a report on every E&O agenda that then comes as a report to the full board to exactly how much contingency we used on any project, how many change orders we've had to do. And on any of the larger change orders, we report them out to the board at the end of the project.
It says the general manager shall brief the appropriate committee and the board on the details of all final approved change orders. That's already in the policy.
Show me where you're reading, because
it's section 9.0.
That one's under the professional services contract.
Oh, that's the professional services.
Yeah, it's not specifically.
No, it's under 9.0.
It is.
Yep.
Yes, it's there.
Okay. I just have to comment on the teamwork I'm seeing here on the committee. It's inspiring.
And it would be our preference to keep the upper limit. The larger projects tend to have larger change orders. What we really don't want to do is impact or slow down a project or restrict that in any way, but we would be very happy to brief the board on any of those change orders that are occurring. And as we showed you on the last project, the treatment plant project, a lot of the change orders are actually staff initiated. They're ones that we've come out to a project and noticed a benefit or a savings we can do, but we need to be able to react quickly usually and have general manager authority on at least that 5% and then come and talk to the board. And then obviously if we're reaching that threshold, we're going to be telling you about every change order from there moving forward, unless we ask for additional contingency or additional change order allotment. But we will be bringing it forward from then.
Okay. Thank you. I think that satisfies me.
All right. Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Grass. Thank you, Katie. I don't know your last name. Sorry.
Fowler.
Oh, like Fowler. Sure, Fowler. Okay, got it. So thank you, Ms. Fowler, for the work you did to gather all the data. And thank you, Ms. Patterson, as well. And I know you took some time this afternoon to answer some of my questions ahead of the meeting as well. And I just want to say it was a good experience to kind of reread the purchasing policy, because I think we forget the details that are in these policies. So it's always good to reread them. Similarly to the last agenda item, thank you for these attachments at the end. I think the summary analysis is really, really helpful. I'm glad you reached out and found kind of where the other agencies lie with their policies around this. And it shows that we were kind of on the lower end, I guess, compared to some others. And then giving us an idea of what the impact would be of the policy changes. So really, really appreciated that. That made me more comfortable with going along with what staff is generally recommending. Let me look at my notes here. There is one thing that I do want to throw out for discussion. So on the first page, under statement of purpose in the red text, there are three things that are being added as non-discretionary operating expenditures. So customer billing, legal with the parameters of pertaining to litigation or settlements, and then inventory. And I know one of the questions when this was brought up during our conversation was, what do you mean by inventory? And I also had a really great discussion with Mr. Mike Albert about this, so I could get a little bit more information. And I understand why this is being asked for. I know we've often been told the problems that come along with long lead times in ordering materials that are needed. But also Mr. Albert helped me understand kind of the unique situation that they have and when they have to order inventory sometimes, because when things get ordered, they don't get attached to a budget immediately until they're actually put in use. So there's a little bit of uniqueness with inventory as well. So I appreciated learning that. But I still was kind of left with, I feel like this is a little vague and very kind of open. And so I was asking Mr. Albert, what are the words we can kind of put in parentheses next to that, kind of like they did with the legal? And after more of the conversation, I think it came down to, well, that's not necessarily going to work, but perhaps similarly to when there is an exceedance of the $150,000 in contracts or an exceedance in the change order, a report gets made to the appropriate committee. So I think something similar in effect would be if a certain amount of inventory was ordered, it exceeded a certain amount, a report would be made to the appropriate committee, which I'm thinking is engineering and operations, right? Just so there was an awareness that there was kind of that higher level costs being made for inventory, that would make me feel more comfortable. So I just wanted to throw it out for discussion to the committee. And I don't know what the magic number is. I just said, does $150,000 to keep the number similar? I'm like, does $150,000 seem appropriate? And in the end, I don't know ultimately that number matters all the most. It's just kind of making the proper committee aware of perhaps that larger purchase of inventory. So Mr. Albert, feel free to jump in if you think something needs to be better explained or if you want to share your perspective of that as well. That's it. Thanks.
If you really want me to talk. So you kind of caught me a little off guard. I'm still don't have all my faculties coming back from my European vacation. Of course, I don't know if I had all my faculties before the vacation. I was trying to focus on the reason why this will help operations in our discussion. And that primarily has to do with lead times, but it's just getting the inventory in hand so that when a project is ready for construction, we don't have to wait and go to the committee, go to the board, then order, then wait for the lead time and things like that. So it was more just having a more robust inventory as opposed to, just having to wait. In terms of the dollar amount, you know, that really didn't enter my thought process. It was more of, I didn't have a problem reporting it anytime after the fact, once we order the inventory. So whatever the board's pleasure is, I would be okay with that.
Thank you, Mike. It's a kind of a interesting dynamic. You're talking about basically trying to take inventory, which is done usually by a purchase order, and then provide a limit or some kind of approval process to that inventory. Is that what you're trying to get to, Director Almaturgy?
No, I mean, I'm assuming that because this was added as new language to the policy, that there was, that there was some type of process that had to get approval in the past when a certain number of things were ordered or a certain amount or, cost associated with that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to squash the purpose. I understand the reasoning for it, but I also don't want to just, I feel like there needs to be some parameters set on that because, I've not seen anything and this is my position at board to see that any of this has been abused in the past, but it doesn't mean that there might be bad actors in the future. And I just feel like if we can put reasonable parameters in place, that might prevent something from happening in the future.
I have a thought, maybe it can help ease your mind a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even though we're putting it in non-discretionary, the process would still be they have to order it with the purchase requisition, and the purchase requisition still would flow up to Matt's approval level. It's how we order things. It's how we process. And because of the way that Oracle's set up, there are those approvals. We're not going to bypass those approvals. So even putting it into the non-discretionary bucket, it still has to go through the approval authority for Matt to see them.
Okay. So I may be making this a much bigger issue in my mind. So if everyone else is okay with it and it doesn't seem to be an issue, then I will let it go.
Yeah, my experience here in the last year shows that, you know, the requisitions for the meters always go through a committee action. Those are the that's putting things into inventory. And other things, Mike, have you seen any other items that you've asked for approval from the committees on? You can.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Peterson. Yeah, the meters was the example. So if we didn't have this AMI grant, we would normally just order meters as needed to replace. And it would be, after a year, it would be over $1 million. But generally what we would do is we would order a pallet at a time. So we order the pallet, has 289, 300 meters on it. Staff would go out and replace them as they fail or as part of a routine replacement program. And then once that's exhausted, we order another pallet. That's kind of how we've done it in the past. The AMI project is slightly different because we're hiring a contractor to replace larger quantities at a shorter period of time. And so that's why we had brought things like that to the committee and then the board. For example, the first phase of the AMI was, I think, 5,000 meters, and the initial pre-order, which we brought to the committee and the board, because it was like a 26 or 30 week lead time, was something like 1.5 million. So, you know, pipeline, we're starting to see that. Our staff does probably 1 to 3 pipeline replacements per year. And the cost of the material could be anywhere from, I don't know, $80,000 to a couple $100,000, a few $100,000 in pipe and material. And if we can order that up front before we have the plans all finished or the easements all in order and all of that, then we would at least have that in inventory and it'd be ready to go once the project's ready for construction. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, and that's where I was going with a little bit, is that we've had a discussion about getting pipe materials in a faster, you might say, schedule, as right now with the lead times that are available, as we understand it from Courtney and staff. The situation is, do we want to keep the process where that we asked the staff to provide opportunities for the board to review and approve before the general manager does, if anything above 150,000. So that's kind of what this inventory thing discussion is going to. Do we want to authorize above 150,000 on any inventory items? Maybe we can name those items off in the policy, like meters, for one, or other items like pipe.
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to put a limit on it for approval, because I think that's what we're trying to get away from, right? That's why I was just suggesting that rather than coming to the board for approval, that if that certain amount was exceeded, it would just come as a report to the committee. We spent this much on these because of this project kind of thing. So you wouldn't have to wait for approval from a board or committee for them to move forward. Cause what I'm hearing is that's causing problems. And we're trying to get away from that.
Okay. All right. Vice President Gusite, go ahead.
I mean, indirectly, don't we see all expenditures in terms of like check registers and all that? So we would see it anyways, okay, without a separate report. You could always ask what it is. Also, I mean, I know that we've had presentations on inventory control, and I know the staff is, you know, monitors that. So, yeah, I don't see a need personally for a separate report on that. I do have a question, though. Like, it says the purchasing policy doesn't apply to non-discretionary operating expenses. Is there a policy that does apply to non-discretionary? You talked about PO approval and things like that.
No, those are all included in the budget, but those are things that you can't control, like Edison utility rates. You can't go and negotiate a rate with Edison. They just get paid.
Right. Oh, and I know a lot of items only come from one vendor. So you just pretty much got to buy what they're selling. Or yeah. Okay. So it's just essentially your competitive bidding and things like that stuff doesn't apply to non-discretionary is what they mean. Okay.
Yeah. Director Colley.
So I think Kathy's got some good concerns. Inventory does stick out of that list. I look at pretty much everything else in the list. There's either it's just totally non-discretionary, you know, my utility bills pretty much, you know, I'd like to not pay them, but I pretty much do. And other things, you know, there's been board action, conservation rebates, for example. The board approved those rebates. And so either most of the things on that list are of the character that either the board has taken action earlier and then the bill just becomes due, or the bill just becomes due because the lights were on. A bad actor could, and I'm not saying we have bad actors. Okay, so I'm always qualifying this, but the point of a policy is to constrain bad actors, frankly. So if this board generally felt like PVC pipes are bad and we don't want to do them anymore, and some member of staff thought that they were the greatest thing in the world, some member of staff could buy $10 million worth of PVC pipe and put them in our warehouse. I don't know if they'd fit. And that would tie the hands of everybody else because we have to use what we have. So inventory, I'm wondering if we could just simply inventory that is included in the budget would be in this list, because that's something the board has already seen and presumably approved. Whereas just inventory generally, I think of we ordered some vessels that came to the board as an item that for the wellhead treatment projects were even fully designed, knowing that those vessels are going to be a problem to get. Staff said, hey, board, could you please approve the purchase of these vessels, even though we haven't fully designed the system? And we said, sure, that makes sense. So I wouldn't want to bypass that kind of a thing. But if the inventory that's already been budgeted gets bought, then, you know, maybe that language would fix the potential of a bad actor in that the board would have already seen it.
So we could add the wording included in a adopted budget.
Yeah, I just don't know that. I think that just confuses it more.
Yeah.
Only because inventory isn't budgeted for. Inventory is part of an expense or part of a project.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you've approved the project,
right,
it's included in the project. Sure. If you've included the expense budget, you've included it already in the expense budget. Mm-hmm. Inventory is an asset to the agency. It's not cash, but it can be sold and right. cash recovered. So it's one of those items that we keep, and we're talking about, you know, pipe and huge fittings, and, you know, not somebody's not gonna like, it's not an office supply inventory, it's a warehouse inventory for the operators. So I don't know if you say yes, it's budgeted. If the project was already in the budget, then yes, that would be it. Or if you say if it's, you know, it's in the expense budget, then yes, that would be true. So if we do want to say if as long as the project or the expense was budgeted for, then that would be okay.
I was going to say you could just add the word purchasing policy does not apply to budgeted non-discretionary operating expenses. Is that fair? Does that fix all of the problems? I don't know how with the PO policy people are going to buy $2 million worth of PVC pipe unless they want to pay for it themselves and put it in a warehouse, because nobody's going to pay for it. PO policy.
Well, yeah. So your point is that you would hope that the general manager catches it rather than the board being aware of it.
I mean, we do report all of our checks, but if it's a comfort level, I think if we're, so we, you know, the, it's not just projects like Mike is talking about. So it would go through mostly through this committee, because Fleet More Housing is under Kim. So it would come to this committee that if, you know, we replenish our inventory, so they use it, right? All day long, they use pipes, they use fittings, they use meters. And once a month or whenever they do their cycle count, they reorder. So it would be reordering or restocking our shelves per se. So those have been expensed already and we're just recovering what we've already sent out. But if you do want to see just large purchases as just an item for inventory, we can include it in our general section or something if you want to know.
Just to make sure I'm understanding the issue. If that word inventory was taken out of that paragraph, then anything 150 and less be no problem. General manager's authority. It's only a large expenditure on inventory that would need to be brought to the board. I'm not. Yeah. So what would be bad about the board that meets twice monthly seeing approving?
That could be everything, though. That could be like a backhoe or a generator, or
those aren't inventory, I don't think, are they?
They're not inventory. No, inventory.
So $200,000 worth of pipe somebody anticipates needing and wants to order it. Is there something does something bad happen if the board needs to take action probably on a consent calendar for ordering that pipe? I'm just trying to figure out what's the problem.
If it's over $150,000, we would have to follow the formal purchasing, competitive bidding and advertising and
evaluating.
Right. And in this market we have, especially with the Buy America, Build America, and American Iron and Steel, there are a few select vendors that we can go to get some of the materials that we need. So it would be, we would go to those vendors and not put a bid out on the open market. But I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. I could fight it either way. It's just something that we thought we would add to the policy to make it more efficient and, you know, through the procurement process. But we could take it out and just do have business as usual.
I think, well, my opinion is for efficiency purposes, why, you know, it's fine. And, you know, why zoom in on pipe? I mean, we could question anything and everything all day long. You could say, are we using the right legal counsel? Did we like competitive bid this or that? You know, I just think the board needs to stay at a higher level, and I'm not worried about pipe. Would be my opinion. I mean, I just don't want to see that coming to us. I mean, I guess we could see how often it comes to us, but it's staff time too. It's decision time. It's, you know, public participation time on things that we may not do anything different on. And the competitive bid thing takes forever.
Okay,
Director Cole.
You okay with a little bit back and forth here? So you bring up Maria brings up like you know, legal counsel. Okay, paying legal counsel. Well, legal counsel, again, one of those things that the board has selected the attorney, and so we've had some prior participation before that bill becomes due. I agree. I don't think my comments aren't intended to anything over, you know, $150,000. You can just buy it out of a catalog. $151,000. We got to go to, oh my God, the public bidding process. It sounds like a you know, that wouldn't be my intent. My comment was more, I just think that the board needs to be participating ahead of the expenditure in some way for a large expenditure. And pretty much everything else, we are. I can't think of another obvious time when we would not have some participation ahead of the expenditure, other than some, you know, under this policy as written, the staff presumably could have said, we need to inventory a few vessels at, and how many, I don't know how much they cost.
But vessels aren't on inventory.
Well, why are we, you can inventory vessels. I mean,
I guess we could, but they're not on our inventory list.
That also shut down my backhoe argument. So, yeah, it's the same thing.
Maybe it'd be helpful to, because I think we're all trying to create a construct around which to have the discussion, right? So, And I've been sitting here trying to think of a clearer one myself, not very successfully. Is Mike laid out the meter one as one? Are there other constructs that might be helpful that, you know, normally what we would normally see when we're stocking inventory? I know we buy, you know, aggregate or trench backfill sand. You know, we have those piles of stuff that people move around. I assume that's inventory. I'm trying to think of something that meets the definition of inventory and is more than $150,000 typically when we buy it.
Right. It would be primarily for a project other than a restock of materials, maybe for a project that we had to have a long lead time, but we had something at our warehouse.
So when you say that, like, say it's in our budget that we're going to replace the pipeline and we're going to do it with our own forces. See, to me, that's sort of like the budget process is sort of captured that. That's why it's a budgeted project. And
the only thing that I can think of to piggyback on what you're saying is maybe a break, a mainline break, right, that we would have, like, we have it in stock and we do
that emergency reporting thing. So that's kind of covered. We do that memo that gets read at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. One that I can think of that does come up from time to time, and I do see requisitions, is, you know, when a pump fails or we pull a pump for maintenance and we find, oh, we need to buy X, and it's, you know, X when you're dealing with those kinds of facilities is often more than $150,000. Mm-hmm. That's an example where being able to expedite it, but perhaps not having an exact budget for pulling that pump to maintain it. It's more of a pull it and see what needs to be done. I don't know. That's my attempt at a construct.
Is it inventory?
Is it inventory? That's a good question. Yeah.
I mean, would it help? We say budgeted inventory, and then we could add a sentence there that says anything, a budgeted inventory in excess of $150,000, we note at the next available committee. I mean, we can easily just put it in one of our reports if that's what we want to see, but leave it.
I mean, it's in
it. Yeah, but it's just typing in a line rather than doing a competitive bidding process. But
so there's transparency to the board, right, on the spending over that amount and what it's being spent on.
I don't understand why we care if we spend $160,000 on inventory and we don't need to see a line item on $160,000 for legal counsel. I don't see the extra attention on inventory.
So can I respond? The difference I see is that for legal counsel, we've had some prior participation at the board level. Okay, basically everything else I see on this list, there's been some prior board participation where we could influence, change, say, don't do that, whatever. But just this open-ended inventory, staff can interpret that pretty much any way they want. And I'm not saying they would, but the point is to, again, kind of have the board have some participation in these decisions ahead of the funds being committed. So that's why I think it's important that, or I'd like to see some language where we ensure that the board has not just noticed after the fact, but has some ability to participate ahead of a large expenditure. That's my concern.
Excuse me, Mike Alvord has his hand raised. He'd like to speak again.
Go ahead.
Yeah, with all due respect, that sort of defeats the purpose of this. Right now, when we're doing a large pipeline replacement project, you know, we do plans, we do design, we do potholing, we do all the work, all the background work, where while we're doing that, if we were able to purchase the pipe from day one, then that pipe would be in stock when everything else was done. I thought that what Director Armitage and I discussed was at the next recent meeting, we say, hey, we bought $250,000 worth of ductile iron pipe. I can promise you now I won't be here for that many more years, but I can promise you I will not be buying PVC pipe. I know that doesn't hold true for people after me, but I can guarantee you that. And then we can come to whatever committee and say, hey, we just bought $250,000 worth of pipe and materials for this project where we're going to replace once everything is in line and ready to go. But again, if that's not the pleasure of the committee or the board, then that's okay.
So, Mike, obviously the design, potholing, all that good process, you're talking typically of about months. What would prevent you from saying the ultimate project is we want to put a mile's worth of ductile iron in to replace this other pipe? We don't have the specific design. We don't have all the right-of-ways yet. We don't have a whole lot of things yet. But what we do know is we don't want plastic pipe, but we do want 6-inch ductile iron pipe, and coming to the appropriate committee and the board saying, we think it'd be best because there's a long lead time on this stuff, or the price is going to go up or whatever, that you would get approval from the board to buy a mile's worth of 6-inch ductile iron pipe in anticipation of this project that's not yet fully designed. Is there any reason that wouldn't work or wouldn't be a good idea?
No, that would be fine.
Actually, it's happening now. That's how we do things, in my opinion, because the project has been vented through the budget process, then the project is then discussed at a committee level to be approved to start with a budget amount. So really the aspect of buying the pipe for the project is, you know, part of the job, basically. So as far as this inventory discussion, I think what we're trying to do is trying to get our arms around what inventory is. And I love accountants to tell us what inventory is to their mind, but I've been hearing a little bit about that. It's going to be an asset to the agency.
Inventory is an asset.
And that asset has to have some reason to get there somehow, approved by the board or approved by the general manager, if it's below $125,000 or $150,000. So I think the word inventory is fine sitting there.
So $10 million worth of pipe to be bought at
Sure. Well, does general manager want to approve that? No, he won't. So. Anyway, what do we I'd give it back to the staff a little bit to wrestle with inventory and see if we come up with some verbiage for that discussion, maybe to satisfy all these comments that we got.
Do we just want to take inventory out for now and get the policy approved, and then we can revisit the next revision maybe?
Let me ask you, what is it?
Excuse me, can I just remind you to turn on your microphone? They can't hear you.
Thank Sorry,
you.
Is it hampering you to not have that word in there now?
Hampering? No. I mean, we could still go with the same process that we're doing.
No.
That we're doing now.
Okay, so just taking the word out isn't really going to be a problem for you. Okay.
So I feel bad because I didn't want to create an issue, because again, I, in conversation with Mr. Albert and Ms. Patterson, I see the purpose. I understand. And it sounds to me like it would be helpful to staff to carry out their duties in a timely manner, having that added. So I wish I had the magic words to propose to make it what I would feel comfortable with. And so I feel bad. I don't want it to come out. I wish there was some language that we were all happier with that would allow the operations department to do what they need to do, because they're asking for this, right? To be able to do their jobs. And I want to be able to help them with that. So, is this time dependent? Can we come back at the next meeting perhaps with having your staff mull it over a little bit, and maybe you can come up with the magic words and check with Mr. Alver to make sure he's happy with the magic words, and then bring it back to us and see. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Can we get recommendation to include all the changes without inventory, just in case?
Yes.
Could be months of when we come
back. Yes.
So do you want to take the inventory out for now, and then we'll bring it back with a new revised policy when we get the inventory
language
figured out?
Yeah. I think that would be a good idea, just to get the update in place for the rest of it.
90%.
I think we can have I think we better define the issue of pre-purchasing for projects, and that might be its own category
section
with a different treatment. You know, that we're in this operating environment now where the lead time on things is getting to be ridiculously long, and you know, motor control centers over a year, and so there is a changing practice among water agencies to try to do more pre-purchasing, and we may want to think about just tackling that issue, you know, as its own standalone section of the policy with some parameters around it.
Perhaps that would just have a larger base, you know,
a little bigger footprint,
$250,000,
and some reporting, something like that. So
we can do it as is with the without the word inventory on consent for the whole board, like now. Okay,
sure.
That's okay.
Everybody's in agreement with that.
Okay. And as I understand it, that still means inventory below 150 is still good.
Correct. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So you don't worry, you didn't do a lot of damage.
So just to be clear, we're going to remove the word inventory, and then it'll be presented to the board as a consent.
It'll be on consent.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. All right, we'll move on now to item 8, or is it 7? No, 7. Item 7, recommend receiving and filing the May 2023 financial report.
So just looking at the statement of revenues and expenses just through May, we are about 18% under budget in all of our operating revenue. That, of course, is still, I think, lingering drought messaging that's included, but we're also 22% below budget in expenses, a little bit higher in water quality and treatment and engineering services, ramping up, I think, the labor associated with the master plan that's in the budget for this year. Still tracking below budget in our capital improvement projects, which we, again, did anticipate carrying over a significant amount of dollars to our fiscal year 23-24 budget. And we are looking at a net increase for the month of May of about $5.6 million. So included in the section is the cash and investment report, a section on our debt and our cash position, and our director stipends and large disbursements. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Eckard, do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? None? We move on. Thank you, Bruce. Item 8 is the committee's planning calendar.
Yes, so we have planned for next month for our investment advisor firm, Chandler Financial Management, Chandler Asset Management, CAM, to come in and just give a brief market update. It's part of our contract, so they're going to come in and give us a presentation on the current market conditions. Have another policy coming for revised surplus inventory and equipment. So we're looking at, again, just looking at, you know, current practice and, you know, new opportunities for surplusing equipment. So we're changing that policy a bit. Not recommending to receive and file an affordability study, but bringing forward a discussion of methodology for the affordability study. We've been talking with other agencies and a consultant that does the affordability studies, and bringing forward a methodology to discuss with the committee to include in the affordability study and what we're looking to get out of it. So everyone is part of the process at the beginning, making the cake. Yes. We are also bringing forward our ratepayer advocate policy. Our current contract with our existing ratepayer advocate is expiring at the end of this year. It's time to discuss what we would like to see to have or not to have a ratepayer advocate, but to, you know, bring back the policy so everyone can read it and then determine if we want to move forward with the, if we choose to stay with the rate, with a ratepayer advocate function, if we want to go out for another RFP or to extend the contract with the current ratepayer advocate. So those are discussions that we will have next month.
Shana, I thought President Martin mentioned an ad hoc committee as a possibility for that discussion. I am distinctly remembering people with something about people that have a history with it. We were talking about who was here, who wasn't here. I would talk to him.
Okay. So we can take it off the calendar if he wants to.
If he wants to do an ad hoc, because they would be the ones that would discuss all of that.
I'm done. I don't know. Never heard that before.
And then also in either August or September, we will be bringing forward a looking at our current scenario 3A that we approved in our financing plan, and looking at a scenario 3B and 3C as conditions evolve. You know, when we did that in, you know, February, we were looking at a certain set of capital improvement projects over 10 years for the WIFIA financing. projects have been added, specifically $100 million for PFAS projects. So that will affect, you know, future rate increases because debt would be higher. So we will be coming back with different financing scenarios, just so staff knows which way to move forward. And I think that's it for the planning calendar.
Do we have any public comment?
No comment at this time.
One question for me, Rochelle. What September, you were at one time discussing that we will not meet on, maybe not meeting on September. Are we meeting in September?
Maybe not.
No, we're still there then.
Yes. Okay.
Any questions of Rochelle? Okay. Moving on, item nine is requests of future agenda items from the committee. Hearing them. Oh, we do have one. Director Colley.
Yeah. I don't normally have to go over to that item and am I 20 years or so on the water board. I can't remember in the last 20 years us discussing the possibility of renaming any facility in memory of any particular individual. But I think that we ought to. I can think of the ultimate goal I'm thinking is Jerry Gladbach, who contributed more to water in this state than pretty much anybody in this valley ever has. So I would like to start a process where we consider the possibility of renaming a facility in memory of someone who has been particularly important in this valley. And in my thinking, I'm thinking of this treatment plant being Jerry Gladbach treatment plant. But I would hope that the agenda item is more general than that, so that the committee and ultimately the board would have the ability to do whatever it thinks best. But I'd like to kind of start that process and thinking about it and putting it on the agenda for the near future.
Is for the finance administration committee or to prepare something for the full board?
Whatever. I mean, I'm certainly open to either. Certainly this committee could start the process. I don't think that there's going to be a lot of the members of the board that I'd be a little surprised if they've met a lot of resistance to the overall idea. And perhaps this committee could start the process, and maybe staff could contact family. And, Jerry went by different aliases at different places. So maybe it isn't the Jerry Gladbach. I don't know. So some of those little details might staff might want to consider ahead of time.
When we go through agenda planning, or I actually haven't heard of non-committee stuff coming to committee.
It's I'm trying to think what box to put it through. I agree. I think it's something that there will, my sense is the board would welcome that discussion. Trying to think in real time here, which isn't always effective for me, but
yeah, I have no objection.
I did get to this where was the facility I figured you were going to say, so I was right about that.
It's not important to me where it exactly goes. I just think that it's something that we ought to consider.
well, it's one of the two filter plants that isn't already named after somebody, and it's a CLWA legacy, which was the board he came from, and he was certainly had a lot of involvement in State Water Project and treats State Water Project water. I can see some nexus there, but there's other, you know, there might be other ideas. Are you looking for a one-off consideration of that? Are you looking to have to develop a policy around it, or?
No, certainly not a policy. This is something that's going to come up.
That's baggage from my old employer.
Yeah. No, I'm looking for one off
after people who then did bad things while they were still alive. And I had a board that said, we will never name anything after anybody again. Ever.
We should. Yeah. I agree with the philosophy that you shouldn't name things after people that are still alive because they have still time to do bad things. But Jerry didn't do anything bad that I ever knew about. And he's certainly not going to in the future.
I agree. Since we haven't really tackled this kind of thing, I'm just trying to think of, I think it'd probably be best to agendize it for a committee and then bring it to the board for consideration. We have to be careful in talking. I can certainly reach out to Donna, but I don't want to create like an anticipation only to have a result in disappointment. So, think about how to manage that carefully.
Appreciate you thinking about
it. And there's something else nice happening. I think there's a plan for someone to do a commemorative article this summer as well. They've reached out to me, some of his colleagues from NWRA that did the nice article on the new agency out there, that same publication. They want to do a Jerry commemorative in their upcoming issue. So it's on my to-do list to call Donna about that. So, and hopefully she's not watching.
Well, I can't very well.
Probably not, yeah. Okay.
All right. Any other requests to consider? With that, do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. And item 10, before the adjournment, general report on...
Just a couple things that was not on the planning calendar that will be added. We're going to be coming forward with a customer service policy update. We're transitioning a process from engineering to customer care, and has to do with the construction meter deposits and setting up a miscellaneous fee and charge for installs for those construction meters. So that will be coming to a future meeting, as well as we're in the last year of our contract with LSL, our current auditing firm. So we're going to be looking to extend their contract for one more year. And the last thing, as of today, there are 184 ratepayer assistance program applications.
How many
833 from last month. Yeah. So, and we are accepting all classes who qualify or are eligible. We left the first couple months for the priority group registration. And so now anyone who meets those eligibility requirements will be added to the program.
Yeah.
And that's all they have.
Any comments from the public?
No public comment at this time.
Okay, no questions. I have one question. For sale, and it just left my brain. It's been that day. Yeah. Oh, yes. Just generally speaking, do you have any updates on how we're producing electricity out of our solar panels? Are we doing well?
It was 100% for a while, and then there was a rodent issue, from what I heard, eating through some wires. So that's being remedied. I'm assuming by now it's back up in service.
Good. Any other questions, comments? Well, I'm always impressed why they like that kind of stuff. With that, we move on to 11, which is adjournment. Thank you all.
Thank you.